Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
3, 2, 1.
But I've worked it out. I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Fern Lundquist joins me. Hall of Famer Jim Calhoun. NASCAR icon Dale Earnhardt Jr. Kirk Herbstreit is on the phone. Welcome in.
Here.
Episode 3.
We.
96 of the podcast. Speaking America, the Air Tour Sports Podcast. It is Monday, May 3rd. 2021, people. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the last couple days of the NFL draft. Hope you enjoyed the Kentucky Derby. We got ourselves a busy, busy Air Tour Sports Podcast here on a Monday in May. Lot to discuss, lot to talk about. My idea for this show is pretty simple. We're going to open, just do a little cap of the NFL draft, if you will. I'm not going to go team by team. This team got an A. The Rams get a C. Like, that's not what we're going to do today. But what I will do is just kind of give you some teams that I thought over the course of the weekend got better, improved, surrounded the right people with the right pieces, things of that nature. Just four or five teams that I like what they did overall. From there, we will actually take a break early and then transition to some basketball, because weirdly busy weekend in basketball. Nolan Hickman, point guard, committed to Kentucky. He decommits, and I'll just say this. I don't want to get anybody nervous, but we got a month until players report to campus. Kentucky does not have a point guard on the roster, so we'll talk a little bit about that situation. What could be the answer? Because Kentucky, John Calipari, they got to get moving here, party people. From there, another decommitment. Amani Bates, the number one high school player in the country, just finished his junior year, was committed to Michigan State. We'll talk a little bit about that, why I don't think it's as big of a deal as many people will make it out to be. And then finally, Steve Kerr had a very interesting comment about players that are now coming into the NBA, basically saying that he believes that players have never been less prepared for the NBA. I thought it was a very telling and very interesting comment, and so I do want to hit on that. But let's talk about the NFL draft, because if you listen to Thursday night's episode, basically it was a Friday show, we essentially discussed the NFL draft, the opening round, what I liked, what I didn't like, and it was a really fun episode. If you did not listen, I encourage you to go back, talked a ton about Justin Fields to the Bears, about Mac Jones to the Packers, about why the Bengals drove me crazy by passing on Penei Sewell to draft Jamar Chase. So really fun episode on round one. And what I want to do over the next, I don't know, 10 minutes is just break down a couple teams that as the draft went on, as the draft concluded on Friday and Saturday, that I really like what they did. And like I said off the top, this isn't going to be grading all 32 teams. Like, I am not Mel Kiper, okay? I do not have time to figure out which cornerback from San Diego State and which defensive tackle from Maryland and which kicker from Clemson, how they fit in with the new Cowboys, this and the new scheme and this defensive coordinator. That's not what I'm about. That's not what I do. But in general, I think we can talk about four or five teams that I just think really, one, kind of across the board upgraded their talent, and then two, just kind of did things and made moves to help their teams overall. And so the first team I want to start with is the New York Jets. And it's really funny, because if you listen to this podcast, and I hope you do, you know that over the last two or three episodes, I've basically crushed the idea of drafting Zach Wilson number 2 overall. I do not get the fascination. I do not understand why a guy that basically had one good season of college basketball was such a clear-cut, definitive number two overall pick. And basically, my argument is pretty simple. If you're going to argue that Mac Jones only started for 1 year in college football and that it should be held against him, or the fact that Trey Lance did not play, should we not also judge Zach Wilson on the fact that, yes, he was a starter for 3 years, but he wasn't very good for two of them? And as a matter of fact, a year ago, he was in a QB battle to actually win the job back coming into this last year at BYU. So I did not love the draft pick of Zach Wilson. I would have taken Justin Fields personally, but I only bring it up to say that if Zach Wilson fails, it will not be because of the New York Jets, who basically used day two and day three to do everything that they could to surround him with as much talent as they possibly could to put him in the best position to succeed. Basically the exact opposite of how the Jets handled Sam Darnold here over the last couple years, where they basically put him on an island and said, hey, figure it out, kid. Zach Wilson is the exact opposite. So what did the Jets do that made me like what their draft was over the course of the weekend? First of all, offensive line. It started really last year. Mekhi Becton from Louisville was their first round pick. He played well this year. But even in round one, even by the end of the night in round one, the Jets drafted another offensive lineman, a guy that many consider to be the best offensive guard in the draft, a guy by the name of Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. So right away, you're establishing, we are going to do our best to protect this new quarterback. He is the franchise. If we succeed or fail, it will be because of Zach Wilson. And so we're going to do our best to make sure that he gets taken care of behind the line of scrimmage. So Elijah Vera Tucker, an offensive lineman. Then on day two, how about this? If you guys are college football fans, you remember Elijah Moore from Ole Miss. Basically, Lane Kiffin went out of his way to get this kid the ball every chance he got. He is a playmaker and a difference maker at the wide receiver position. Most people seem to think that he was going to go in the first round of the NFL draft, so he falls to the second round. The New York Jets get him. They add a running back from North Carolina who was very productive in his last season of college football. And so when I look at the New York Jets, I just really feel like they really did everything that they can to put Zach Wilson in a position to succeed. Will it work? Will it not? I don't know. It being Zach Wilson. But they did just about every single thing that they could. And I really do like what the New York Jets did for Zach Wilson. Let's go to another team that impressed me over the last 3, 4, 5 days. And that's Urban Meyer's Jacksonville Jaguars. And part of it is like, yeah, do I have a little bit of a man crush on Urban Meyer? Yeah, maybe we could possibly say that. But what I would also say is like, there is a good reason that I have a man crush on Urban Meyer, and it's because he is one of the great college football coaches of my lifetime. He is one of the great talent evaluators of my lifetime. And I think it's going to work in the NFL. I mean, is he going to be there for 10 years? I don't think so. I don't think his body can physically handle it. I don't think his body can physically handle, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 losses per year. But I think you might get a good 3 or 4 year window with Urban Meyer where you are really competitive. And so, yes, it starts with Trevor Lawrence. Yes, he is a very, very, very talented, potentially transformational quarterback, definitive number one pick. But again, it's what I like what they did after the first round to surround him. First of all, again, like the Jets, it started actually in the back end of the first round where they took Travis Etienne. Travis Etienne was, of course, the running back that that played with him at Clemson. They had a ton of success together. There's a comfort level. Travis Etienne is not only a great rusher, but a great blocker, a guy that is a great pass catcher out of the backfield. And so I think that success will continue from there. Beyond that, I thought Urban Meyer crushed the draft. Second round, Tyson Campbell, a cornerback from Georgia, many believed would be in the first round. He was really good throughout his career at Georgia. So to get him in the second round as a potential first rounder, I thought was big. On top of that, an offensive tackle named to watch, Walker Little, was basically like the number one player in high school football his senior year. Almost everybody thought he would eventually end up as a first-round pick. His sophomore year, he's injured. His junior year, he opts out because of the disaster that is college football. And so you potentially got a first-round talent at offensive tackle in the late second round that, frankly, if he had played this year, he might have gone round one. On top of that, later in the draft, you get a safety named Andre Sisco from Syracuse. I watched a few Syracuse games because they were playing good teams. He was good. And also Jay Tufele, who was another player from USC that opted out. And again, if the Pac-12 wasn't such a mess, this guy would have played, and he would have gone much, much, much higher than he ended up. And so I thought they did a very good job in terms of surrounding him or surrounding this team and just kind of upgrading the talent across the board. A couple guys that fell because of opt-outs are now Jacksonville Jaguars, and so I do like what the Jacksonville Jaguars did. Number three, how about the hometown Cleveland Browns? That's right, the dog pound, baby. Okay, that was weird and terrible. Forgive me. But, you know, the Browns are an interesting story, right? Because they're basically, I don't even think it's a debate. They have to be one of the most three, four, five talented teams on the most talented rosters in the NFL. I don't know if it will work. But, you know, if it doesn't work, it's probably going to be because of Baker Mayfield. It's not because they don't have talent everywhere else. Miles Garrett, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, et cetera, et cetera. And so when you're that talented, even though they only made, quote-unquote, the second round of the playoffs, it's about just kind of finding pieces to kind of that can plug and play, right? You don't need this massive overhaul. You just need dudes that know how to play. And so in the first round, they take the cornerback Greg Newsom from Northwestern. Obviously, a lot of people like him. In the second round, they get a linebacker from Notre Dame that was basically Notre Dame's best defensive player named Jeremiah Owusu. He was a guy that many believed would go in the first round. And then I love this. Third round, Anthony Schwartz. Anyone who watched college football knows this was the kid at Auburn, maybe the fastest player in college football last year. It's really hard in the SEC to stand out because of your speed, but this kid did. This kid was a stud, and I think he is going to be a piece that Kevin Stefanski can use alongside Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry as a deep threat, as a home run threat. Love what he brings. And then finally, a couple other guys, Richard LeCount, safety from Georgia. Again, criticize Kirby Smart if you want, and I thought about doing a whole segment on how Georgia's underachieved because they haven't made the playoffs since 2017 with all the talent that they have. I will save that conversation for another day, but I only bring it up to say that if you can play defensive back at Georgia, you're a baller, dude. You're a baller. Last pick for the Browns, Demetri Felton, running back from UCLA. I saw this kid a ton out here on the West Coast. He is good. He is effective. He was a difference maker in the Pac-12, and I believe he can be a really good NFL player. Fourth team. So I have the Jets, the Jaguars, and the Browns. How about that? What a weird, weird deal. The fourth team, and you guys are going to laugh when I say this, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, look, yes, I was the guy that crushed them for taking Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell, the offensive tackle from Oregon. And I do stand by it. I do think that they did it to appease Joe Burrow, to make Joe Burrow happy. But you got to keep Joe Burrow upright for him to be effective. But what I will say is I like what they did after that. First off, they took two offensive linemen, one in round two, one in round four. So they did try to upgrade. They did sign some offensive linemen in free agency. So in theory, even though they passed on an offensive lineman in round one, it's not as though they did not try to address it. And then beyond that, there was a couple other players that I like. Joseph Asai, who played at Texas last year, really good player, was late in the third round. Tyler Shelvin, who was part of LSU's title team a few years ago, big defensive tackle. So I like what the Bengals did. I think for a team that was kind of interesting and sneaky competitive when Joe Burrow was healthy, I thought they brought in a few guys that could play and that are difference makers, and I think this team is going to continue to get better. They still got to keep Joe Burrow upright, but if they can keep Joe Burrow upright, I think they'll be okay. And then the final team, and I'll make this one brief, is the New York Football Giants. And, you know, what I like about the Giants, so they take Kadarius Toney round one on Thursday night. And the reason that I like it is actually pretty simple, is because the Giants are now in a position where if you watch the NFL, you know all about Daniel Jones, Danny Dimes. Is he the guy? Is he not the guy? The reason I like this pick and the reason I like, you know, some of the other stuff that the Giants did later in the first round, I will say Aziz Ojulari from Georgia, a defensive lineman. I think he was really, really, really good this year. Another guy that many people thought would go in the first round. But I bring it up because of the fact that when it comes to the Giants, I just like the Kadarius Toney pick because of the fact that, you know, they're basically saying right now, they're drawing the line in the sand. This is it. Daniel Jones, are you the answer? And they're doing everything they can to put their quarterback in position to succeed. And so when I go back to their draft, it really is their draft plus everything that they've done over the last couple years. They obviously have Saquon Barkley. They obviously have Evan Ingram, former Ole Miss tight end. They got some other wide receivers. But this year, they went up and took a playmaker, a difference maker in Kadarius Toney from the University of Florida. And they basically said, like, look, Danny Dimes, this is it. If you are the guy, now is the time to show it. We are giving you every weapon we can. We are putting you in position to succeed. And if you can't do it, it's going to be time to move on. I think on the flip side, I actually look at it as a positive because even if Danny Dimes is not the answer at quarterback, guess what? You're going to have a lot of skill and a lot of talent on the roster to potentially lure a free agent quarterback next year. All these quarterbacks, there's always quarterbacks that become available. This year it was Sam Darnold, Teddy Bridgewater, Carson Wentz, on and on and on and on and on. You have no idea who may or may not be available this time next year. So if Danny Dimes is not the answer, well, guess what? You know what? You got a lot of guys around to help whoever the next quarterback is. All right, so that was kind of my thoughts on the NFL draft. You know, I would love for your guys' perspective. I know you guys, we got a lot of Bengals fans that listen, a lot of Titans fans that listen, a lot of whoever, Falcons. Let me know what you think. You can always reach out at @Aaron_Torres on Twitter, at @AaronTorresPod on Instagram, and, of course, AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the NFL draft. But those are kind of my big picture takeaways, the guys that I thought actually, the teams that I thought did really well and served their kind of rosters well to upgrade. Does it mean the Jacksonville Jaguars are winning the Super Bowl next year? Of course not. But I do think it's going to be interesting to follow these teams. And overall, I'll just say this. I thought it was a really fun draft. I thought it was really well done. And again, I said it on Thursday's episode, but credit to Roger Goodell. They were basically the first event that we had at all last April during the pandemic. They pulled it off under just really, really, really tough circumstances. To come back now a year later, have 50-plus thousand fans in Cleveland. By the way, same weekend that there was 50-plus thousand fans at the Kentucky Derby. It's great to see things finally back to normal. But I give credit to Roger Goodell. I give credit to the NFL for pushing forward in what was a really fun NFL draft. Again, reach out to me with any teams or thoughts that you have. But what I am going to do now, take a quick commercial break. Not commercial break, just a regular break. And I'm going to come back and talk about a lot of college basketball news that happened over the course of this weekend as Nolan Hickman decommits from Kentucky. On top of that, we had Amani Bates decommitting from Michigan State. And I do want to get to that Steve Kerr quote that I talked about earlier. I will be right back. Stick around. Stay tuned. I'll be back. All right, everybody. I am back. Good to be back. Don't know how much you missed me. But I do want to talk, I want to transition from football to basketball. A lot to get into. Weirdly busy weekend. I mean, you know, this is supposed to be the slow time of year in college hoops. It wasn't all that long ago. Even like, and when I say not that long ago, I'm talking like a year, two, three, 4 years ago, where once the season ended, there really wasn't all that much to talk about as it pertained to college basketball. Not anymore. We got the transfer portal. We got a few high school players still committing, and we got some guys decommitting, and that's what I'm going to get to here over the next few minutes as Nolan Hickman, five-star McDonald's All-American point guard who was initially committed to Kentucky. He decommits. Shocking news. Huge news. We're going to break it down. And then Amani Bates, the number one high school player in the junior class of 2022, a player that many believe is as good, if not basically the best high school player since LeBron, decommits from Michigan State. We'll talk about that, why I think it's time to drop that label of best high school player since LeBron. We'll get into that, and then a Steve Kerr quote, which I found really interesting, but I do want to start with Nolan Hickman because this is mega news. And as a little bit of backstory, Nolan Hickman, again, five-star-ish, you know, kind of a fringe five-star point guard, had been committed to Kentucky really for about a year now. I mean, I don't remember the exact day that he committed, but basically sometime mid-pandemic, June, July, August, somewhere in there, decides to commit to Kentucky, has basically been committed to Kentucky for a year, and there was no reason to think that he was not committed to Kentucky until late Friday when he announced that he will be decommitting from the school. Now, normally, decommitments happen. It's part of the deal. This one jumped out for a few reasons. First of all, because Kentucky actually needs him. I mean, this is not the kind of case where maybe he was the fourth guard taken in a class and he kind of realized, like, hey, if I get to campus, I might not play. Kentucky has no point guards on its roster right now, which is why this is so big. Devin Askew, their starting point guard from last year, has transferred. He is now at Texas. Kentucky is actively recruiting the transfer portal. And so I don't think anybody, including John Calipari, expected this guy to be a starter next year and be like the point guard of the team. But I also, they needed him as a backup, as a reserve. He was a kid that was going to play minutes. But then, two, the bigger story was, in addition to the fact they didn't have a point guard, is it came out of nowhere. And as soon as it happened, I think I had the same reaction that most of you did, was one of two things has to be true. One, either Kentucky has not only one transfer ready to commit, but possibly two. Is it possible that he got wind that they're just loading up in the transfer market and that because of it, he's not going to have a place? That was my first thought. And then my second thought, which I think also a lot of you thought, was, is this just another bad piece of news for Kentucky? And is this program just falling apart? Like, it is just possible that he decommitted, he watched the team last year, they stunk, and he said, I want nothing to do with it. But the reality is that it is actually neither. So the reason he decommitted, shout out to my buddy Jack Pilgrim. Maybe I'll get Jack Pilgrim on here in the next few weeks to kind of talk about what's going on with Kentucky. But shout out Jack Pilgrim because he got an interview with Nolan Hickman's dad, and a couple things stood out. First of all, he was really close with Tony Barbie, who was his lead recruiter. Tony Barbie has recently left Kentucky to take the Central Michigan head coaching job. So that was the first reason he left. Tony Barbie was his primary recruiter. Joel Justice was his secondary recruiter. Joel Justice has also left for another assistant coaching job. And so his two main points of contact basically are no longer at Kentucky. But then the bigger one, which I found very interesting, was that basically Nolan Hickman had a crappy year at high school because of all these COVID restrictions and basically said, I don't want to travel 3,000 miles across the country. I am from Seattle. I don't want to go all the way across the country and then potentially be locked up in my dorm room again. And so this is what his dad told Kentucky Sports Radio's Jack Pilgrim. This is why he decommitted. This is what you need to know. This is what the dad said. It was rough with COVID. You've got to be away from family again. COVID has played a part in people's lives way more than you think. I don't think we took into consideration that he was allowed to have a season, but me and his mom, we were in tune with our child, but we weren't as in tune as we needed to be. We sent him to Mount Pleasant, Utah. So this kid played high school ball in Utah, away from the city, friends, and family. FaceTime isn't enough. And then you go through stretches. Having a season almost hindered his growing and his capability of life. Anyway, it's a long quote, but this is essentially what you need to know. This kid is from Seattle. He went to prep school in Utah, and while he was allowed to play a season, essentially he spent the whole season in lockdown, right? No different than most of college basketball, where you go to the gym, you practice, you play a game, then you immediately go back to the dorm, you immediately quarantine. And this kid said he came home for the summer to get ready to go to Kentucky, and he said, Dad, man, I just spent a year isolated from everything and everyone I know. I don't want to go 3,000 miles away and do the same. And so while I know it's frustrating for Kentucky fans, I do hope you guys kind of understand, and I do hope, frankly, that there's a little bit of sympathy because, you know, what Nolan Hickman went through and what he's describing is what I think all of us went through at some point. Like, I can't criticize Nolan Hickman because I know myself I went through this. It's not funny, but it's interesting. I vividly remember when I read that quote, it took me back to, I forget if it was November, December, but we went through all of last year. I live in California, I think most of you know. Things were finally getting back to normal in September, October. World's kind of getting back to the way that it was. And then, bam, right around Thanksgiving, everything shut down again. Couldn't eat at restaurants, couldn't eat outside, couldn't do the basic things that we as humans want to do. And I vividly remember one day out for a walk with my wife, just trying to get out of the house. And it was like 6 a.m. because we get up early and we get stuff done. In the Torres household, that's how we do things. But we're out for a walk. And I just remember saying to her, I said, sweetie, I can't do, we gotta move. I can't do this anymore. I cannot live like, I don't want to use the word prisoner. I don't want to over-exaggerate it, but I can't live like a prisoner. I can't do this. I need to be able to sit outside and drink a beer and not be freaking harassed by the police. And she calmed me down. And like, honestly, it was just one of those moments where like, I was really upset. I was really frustrated. I was really tense. I don't know what the right word is. And I wasn't like moving to Texas the next day or moving to Florida, but like I hit a wall where I was like, I cannot do this anymore. And so I can't blame Nolan Hickman as an 18-year-old kid for going through the exact same thing, for saying I was away for a year. It messed with my head being isolated, being locked up, and I don't want to go through that again. And so, yes, I do want to play closer to home. I do want to play closer to my mom and dad. I do want to play closer to family. And I don't want to have to be somewhere 3,000 miles away, especially now that my two lead recruiters are gone and I don't really know anybody over there. So I can't blame Nolan Hickman, and I do hope that most of you guys kind of understand at least where he's coming from. You don't have to like it. I understand the frustration, but I do understand where he's coming from. I also think in the bigger picture outside of Nolan Hickman, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up committing. But I think in the bigger picture, it is now a fascinating conversation as to what happens with Kentucky. Because as I said a minute ago, we are now a month away from Kentucky's players reporting right around June 1st. Most of college basketball, they're getting their kids back on campus for summer school on a normal schedule. That's right around post-Memorial Day. That is June. That is mid-June. That is late May, whatever it is. Kentucky's planning on having their kids back on campus on June 1, and they don't have a point guard right now. And so to me, this is the single biggest story in college basketball right now, is because you look across the rest of college basketball. Let's just use the SEC. Arkansas, their roster is mostly set. They might add a piece, but it's mostly set. Alabama, their roster, they're waiting for a guy or two to figure out their NBA draft stuff, but their roster is mostly set. Duke, their roster is set. North Carolina, their roster is set. Michigan, Michigan State, whoever. Kentucky does not have a point guard. And it's not as though there's a ton of great options left. And on top of that, I would also say, oh, by the way, you're currently down two assistant coaches who have both left for other jobs. And so if you're John Calipari, I'm just going to say it. I don't know if it's time to panic if you're a Kentucky fan, but it's definitely time to be like a little bit concerned, because we don't have a point guard. We need not only a point guard, but probably a backup point guard. And we're down two coaches to actually do it. I would also say, of course, and this is not a criticism to be abundantly clear, John Calipari's been off the radar with all the Terrence Clark stuff. And I get it. I don't blame John Calipari. He's a father figure to these kids. I don't blame him for not being worried about his point guard situation with the tragic news of last week. Again, to be abundantly clear, I am not blaming him. But what I am saying is he hasn't been able to be as hands-on as possible. Two of his assistant coaches just left. He only currently, as I record here, has one assistant coach, basically having to recruit the entire position. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens going forward. Now, the good news is there are still some good options out there. Xavier Wheeler, the point guard from Georgia, it's kind of interesting. Right before I recorded, I noticed that he put out kind of a cryptic tweet that there's going to be something happening on Monday. Maybe he is the guy, and maybe by the time you guys listen to this, this is all null and void, and you have Xavier Wheeler. Marcus Carr is in the mix, but Marcus Carr is going to test his NBA draft prospects. Marcus Zagorowski is a name I heard. If he comes back to college, would he consider transferring? I'm just going to tell you, I have some pretty good sourcing on that. I don't think he's coming back to college. I have no reason to believe he's coming back to college based on the people that I've talked to around him. I think he is 2 feet in the NBA. His brother plays in the NBA. Once his brother's season ends, they're going to train together to prepare for the draft. And so I only bring it up because Kentucky's window to find a guy is narrowing very quickly. Now, the little bit of saving grace that there is, there's going to be more movement in the transfer portal. One, there's always the possibility that a Marcus Carr does say, hey, I'm just not ready for the NBA, or the NBA is not interested in me. Let me come back and ball out of Kentucky. Obviously, Ty Washington, the five-star kid out of Arizona, is in the middle of his recruitment. So there are options. And like I said, Xavier Wheeler could commit any day now. He is a great option if you can get him. And there are some other pieces that can help Kentucky as well. C.J. Frederick, the former Iowa player, he is set to transfer. It appears as though Kentucky is the team to beat. If that happens, he can be kind of a secondary, third ball handler if you need him. But I'm only bringing it up to say, if you're Kentucky, it is officially go time. And if you're a Kentucky fan, I understand your angst, your nervousness, your whatever, because we are now a month away and you do not have an answer at point. You don't even have a point guard on your roster. So this will be the single biggest story to watch in college basketball going forward as Kentucky tries to figure out who its point guard is for the 2021-2022 year, and you're basically running out of time to do it. As soon as we get an update, I will obviously talk about it. If it is Sevier Wheeler, if we do get somebody else, if somebody else enters the portal, I'll let you know. But to me, this is the single biggest topic in college basketball. All right, let's get into another mega topic from college hoops this weekend. Kind of a weirdly very busy weekend in college hoops. It's funny, right? My buddy John Rothstein says, we sleep in May. There ain't no sleeping because there was a lot of stuff that went on. But I would argue that maybe the single biggest story in college hoops this weekend came on the recruiting trail. Amani Bates, a player that many consider to be the best high school prospect, not only currently in high school basketball, but some have called him the best high school basketball prospect since LeBron, announces that he has decommitted from Michigan State. He committed to Michigan State a little under a year ago, but on Friday he announces that he is both going to decommit from Michigan State while reopening the college recruiting process and that he would also consider pro options. And so I want to get into all this. I want to talk about it. I want to break it down. But as I heard the news and my phone blew up and people were asking me about it, two immediate things came to mind. First of all, I don't think this is as big of a deal for Michigan State as a lot of people may make it out to be. And it was interesting because I saw some reaction from Michigan State fans that would reflect the same thing. But also, let me just say this. I'm never here to tear down, criticize a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid. But as he now enters his senior year of high school, I think we have a pretty compelling argument. It might be time to stop calling this kid the next KD, the next LeBron, the next whoever. Unfair to him. I'm not blaming him. We in the media have done this to him. But I think we have a growing case that we need to stop kind of putting these labels on Amani Bates. So let's get into it. Let's talk about it. And again, as a little bit of a backstory, I think all of you, if you care enough to listen to this, you probably know a little bit about Amani Bates, but 6'10", 6'9", wing, his game is most compared to Kevin Durant, and basically, since the moment he stepped on a high school basketball court back, I guess it was in, 2019, which doesn't seem that long ago, but 2018, so 2018, 2019 would have been his freshman year. Basically, as soon as that season happened, he was labeled as maybe the best high school basketball prospect since LeBron, dominated as a freshman, was great as a sophomore. Obviously, last year, his season was cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic. And what was interesting was in the middle of the pandemic, he made a very weirdly surprising decision seemingly out of the blue to commit to Michigan State. Now, it's worth noting that, essentially the reason he committed to Michigan State was basically the idea that nobody else was recruiting him. Basically, everybody had it had been a foregone conclusion that he was always going to go to the professional ranks. There had been talk all the way back when he was a freshman that they might change the one and done rule and that he might be the face of the new era of basketball when players could go straight from high school back to the NBA like they could back in the day. There was also obviously at that point the G League program with Jalen Green had just started. Australia was always going to be a factor. And so nobody was really recruiting him except for Michigan State because nobody ever believed that he was going to step on a college campus. And it was interesting because even when he committed, I know some people at Michigan State and I don't know about an hour before, but probably a day or two before, they had no idea that he was going to commit to Michigan State. And so that is part of the reason why I don't think this is as big of a deal for Michigan State as a lot of people are going to make it out to be. Yes, if you have a chance to bring in a player that has been compared to LeBron James, whose game resembles Kevin Durant, it's probably he's now more the next KD than the next LeBron because his game is more resembling of Kevin Durant, 6'9", 6'10", three-point range, all that stuff. But obviously, look, on the one hand, you have a chance to bring that guy in. It's a huge story when he decides he's not coming. But on the other hand, the reason it's not that big of a deal is because I don't think anybody, even the day he committed, really expected him to play in college basketball. Keep in mind, I get it. A lot of things can change. A lot of things can change back then. A lot of things can change going forward. But I guess the thought process was maybe when he committed, maybe name, image, and likeness will be in place by the time that he gets to a college campus, so maybe that will entice him to come. But I think the reality was always, first of all, the NBA could change its one-and-done rule, but second of all, there are going to be a ton of professional options for this kid, be it in Australia, be it in the G League. Now, he did say on Friday that he is still considering college options. And by the way, how about my boy Chris Beard, University of Texas, becomes the first school to offer him a scholarship after the decommitment from Michigan State. I'll give Chris Beard credit for this. He is basically trying to turn Texas into like the next great college basketball superpower. He has got his swag since he got to Texas, and I'm really excited to see what he does and where he how he does it. But the fearlessness to just say, yeah, you're probably going to go pro, but here's a college scholarship. We want you to come to Texas. And, of course, the idea being that if the Kevin Durant played at Texas, you're the next Kevin Durant, so come be the next Kevin Durant where Kevin Durant first became Kevin Durant. That's a lot of Kevin Durant in a sentence. But anyway, so that's why I don't think it's that big of a deal for Michigan State, because I don't think anybody really expected him to play college basketball to begin with, and I don't think anybody really expects him to play college basketball going forward. But what I would also say is beyond that, and it's something I've talked about, I think we're starting to get a growing case and a growing narrative if you look at his entire career that other guys are catching up and that the label of best high school player since LeBron, best high school player since KD, you know, whatever, that label is just completely unfair. And so let's talk a little bit about who he is and where he is going, because this is the latest in when the decommitment happened. I texted a few people and they just said, man, there is something that is not totally right there. And again, I'm not here to criticize a 17, 18-year-old kid, but I will tell you, I have kind of been on this from the beginning, right? I've been doing this a long time. I'm not saying I'm good at it, I'm not saying I'm bad at it, but I love college hoops. I've been following this sport forever. And let me just say, from the beginning, I have never bought the hype that this kid was the best high school player since LeBron. You know why? Because I have heard that label dropped so many times on so many people, and it never sticks. First of all, LeBron, 17, 18, 19 years in the NBA, whatever it is, still playing at an MVP level, still playing, still has the Lakers in position to win an NBA championship, still the best player on a title team a season ago. So first of all, that guy is a unicorn. There will never be another LeBron, just like there will never be another MJ, just like, let's be honest, there will probably never be another Allen Iverson, another Shaq, another Wilt, another Russ. We need to stop trying to make these comparisons to once-in-a-lifetime players and people. But even then, I said, like, can we pump the brakes on Amani Bates? Can we stop labeling these kids the best player since LeBron, the best player since Kobe, the best player since KD? Because it's unfair to them. I have been doing this for so long. I remember when, Greg Oden was the best center prospect since Patrick Ewing. Love Greg Oden. Wish him the best. I think he's actually coaching AAU right now. I have no ill will at all towards Greg Oden, but that was never fair to him. It was never fair to Andrew Wiggins to call him the best high school prospect since LeBron. And oh, by the way, it didn't work out. Ben Simmons, the best high school prospect since LeBron. Jabari Parker, who was in Andrew Wiggins' class at one point, was labeled the best high school prospect since LeBron. So you had two different players in the same class labeled as the best high school prospect since LeBron. How could you have two different players who are the greatest player in the last 20 years? It doesn't make sense. It's unfair. And as it pertains to Monty Bates, I thought that label was put on him way too early and way too unfairly as it pertained to his future. And as we look at where he is right now, I think it is officially time to back off. I think he's a really good prospect, five-star prospect. It's really interesting. I saw my buddy Sam Vecini say this. It's like, it's okay to just call him a really, really, really good five-star prospect. We don't have to put labels like Kevin Durant and LeBron James on him. And right now, what I would say personally is that increasingly, I think that we have a growing kind of resume, if you will, that says that he isn't that guy, and at least right now is not going to be that guy by the time that he is finished with high school. First of all, the fact remains that I believe if you kind of just look at the entire body of work of Amani Bates and his family and how things have been handled, and I don't even necessarily blame him for this, this kid has been incredibly sheltered throughout his career, okay? Basically has never played Team USA basketball events. That's where all the best players go. You compete against the other best players in the country. You see who's good. You see who's bad. You see who this, that, the other thing. Amani Bates has basically never played Team USA. On top of that, he has never played, until this summer, the highest level of AAU basketball. They call it 17s, okay? So that is the players that are 17 and under going into their senior year. But obviously, you can play up if you're good enough. It's worth noting, LaMelo Ball. You can criticize LeVar for a lot of things. LaMelo Ball was playing against high school juniors and seniors when he was in 7th and 8th grade, okay? Other guys play 17s if they are ready. Amani Bates, the last time there was a true AAU season, he was coming off his freshman year. The players like Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs, who are going into the NBA right now, were going into their senior years. But Amani Bates didn't play on the level with them. He played at his own age, and basically he was just bigger, stronger, more athletic than everybody else. I mean, you can find clips of that summer where he's basically got a 5'9 kid trying to guard a 6'10 kid that all he does is shoot threes. And so when I look at Amani Bates, it's like if you're really the best player, I'm not saying you have to go to the highest level and dominate Cade Cunningham. I'm not saying you got to dominate Jalen Suggs, but you got to compete with him. And so this was the this year is the first year that he has ever played the highest level of AAU basketball. It's worth noting. You know what last weekend was? The first real weekend of AAU basketball of the summer. You know who was there? A lot of people in the media, and they were there because Amani Bates was there and the number two player in the class, Jalen Duren, was there. Well, I talked to people who were at that event, Jack Pilgrim from KSR, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but the consensus among people that was there was that Amani Bates might still be the best player in the class, but one, the gap is closing, and Jalen Duren outplayed him head-to-head. And so when I look at this entire situation, here are the facts. We now have a kid that has never played Team USA basketball or hasn't been to many events. This is his first year playing the highest level of AAU basketball, goes to an AAU event and gets outplayed by the number two player in the country. It's also worth noting, one of the reasons that Michigan State fans weren't all too frustrated with his decommitment was because there were some hiccups at the high school that he played at this year, which, oh, by the way, the high school that he played at was created by his father for him. And so there was another Michigan State commitment named Jaden Atkins who played at the school. He left a couple weeks in, and the report was because he wasn't happy with the fact that everything revolved around Amani Bates and that he was playing selfishly, he wasn't playing team basketball. And so all I'm saying is there has been this bubble created around him. I don't believe that he has continued to rise and get better at the level that other players did in this class. And I think a couple things. One, there is talk that he won't even be the number one pick in his upcoming draft in 2023. There's a kid from France, 7-footer. He's huge. He's athletic. They're saying he might go number one. There's talk that he being Amani Bates, might not even be the number one high school player in his own class in 2022, and that Jalen Duren, who's originally from Philadelphia, who played at, I believe, Montverde last year, is actually the best player in his class. And so how can you be the best high school player of all time if you're not even the best player in your class? No disrespect, but it's just facts, and I always thought it was unfair. You can go back, find the tweets, listen to the podcast. I always thought it was unfair to label him with that label of the best high school basketball player since LeBron. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. It'll be interesting to see if he chooses the college route. It's worth noting, I saw Sam Vecenie say this, and I do think he might be right about this. This might be the one case where I do think it might be better for this kid to actually choose that G League route as opposed to choosing a college program. And let me explain why. If he chooses college, chances are pretty good, and I don't want to generalize or stereotype. He's probably going to go to a place where things will be catered to him, where everyone will make sure that, again, he stays in the little bubble that he's been in. And I do think going to the G League, getting professional coaching, working with professional trainers, kind of breaking him of some of the bad habits, because right now he's just kind of a gunner, offensive-minded guy, doesn't play defense, doesn't play team ball. Sam brought it up, is like that might actually be the best thing for him. And you guys know I generally advocate for players to go to play college basketball. I think it's a great stage for them. But in his case, he's already got the brand. He's already got the name. Everybody knows him. I do think it'll be interesting to see if he chooses that G League route, Australia or something else. But I will say maybe going pro in his case would be the best thing for him. But Amani Bates decommits, and I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens next. But I'm just going to say it, guys. I really do think that it's time that we start removing that label of best high school prospect since LeBron James. I don't think it's fair to him. And it's okay, by the way. Like I said, this is not a criticism. It's okay to just be a really good five-star, top five NBA draft pick. But I do think it's officially time. Best player since LeBron, best player since KD, whatever. Let's stop using that label when it comes to that kid. It's not fair to him. All right, last little topic that I do want to get to, and frankly, I think it actually does pertain pretty well to what I just talked about with Amani Bates. Listen, as I said 200 times during that Amani Bates segment, I do not wish ill will upon anybody. I don't want to see anybody fail, but I do think that the system kind of set up around Imani Bates has basically been put in place to benefit Imani Bates, maybe even at the detriment of his development. As I just said a minute ago, it feels as though other players are catching up. It feels as though his game is being one-dimensional, and it feels as though that label that he had 2 years ago as the best high school player since LeBron James is quickly slipping away, and it's because of the fact that are the people around him really doing what is actually best for the totality of his NBA career, or are they just doing it, really not just his NBA career, but his entire basketball career, or are they just trying to do stuff that looks cool on mixtapes and doesn't really develop him as a basketball player? And so I saw a quote shortly after Imani Bates decommitted that I thought was incredible, and I thought perfectly encapsulated everything that I'm trying to explain with my, you know, not frustration with basketball, but my concern with basketball. I guess that's the way I would say it. I love college basketball. I love high school basketball. I love being in the gym. I will continue to follow and love this sport no matter what happens. But I do worry about some of the bigger picture issues that pertain to it. And so on Saturday, shortly after I talked about Imani Bates or tweeted about it or whatever, I saw a quote from Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr, of course, is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. This guy has seen more basketball than I could ever forget, right? Like he knows more basketball than I could ever remember, forget, whatever. He played for a national championship team at Arizona. He won multiple NBA titles for the Chicago Bulls, for the San Antonio Spurs. Of course, a three- or four-time NBA champ with the Golden State Warriors. This dude knows basketball, but as his team gets younger, as he gets away from that veteran group that he inherited from Mark Jackson back in 2014, I think he's starting to get frustrated with some of the stuff that is happening as his team gets younger and as he's forced to play younger and younger players, as guys like Klay Thompson get hurt, Kevin Durant leave, etc. So the Golden State Warriors played the Minnesota Timberwolves on Thursday night. They get destroyed on the glass, okay? And not against, like, you know, Dennis Rodman in the 96 Bulls, okay? We are talking about the Minnesota freaking Timberwolves. The Golden State Warriors get out-rebounded by 23 boards, 57-34, and Steve Kerr's frustrated. And here is what Steve Kerr said about his team's lack of rebounding. He said, "This is the modern NBA. Guys don't box out. It's just the way it is. Every night on League Pass, I see the same thing. Players let guys come in from the weak side and they think, I'll just get the rebound. It's a disease that's rampant in the NBA. The problem is if you're a small team like us and it's going to hurt you, blah, 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 blah." He then continued, "Most of these guys didn't have a high school or college coach yelling at them combined for 8 years. It's a different world today and players grow up in a different way in terms of their basketball background. Their detail is often the thing that is lacking." To which I say, thank you, Steve Kerr, because you just perfectly encapsulated what my thoughts have been on kind of the way that we get players from 8, 9, 10 years old to the NBA. You just perfectly encapsulated exactly what I said. As Steve Kerr said, essentially players are coming to the league younger, they are less prepared, they understand how to play basketball less, and I'll just be brutally honest, this plays into something that I have said for a really long time. If basketball, if the NBA, if Adam Silver really cared about the future event of the NBA and the good of basketball in general, he would stop talking about this nonsense of let's move up the NBA draft or we should let kids leave when they're 18 years old. Instead, it would be the exact opposite. If he really cared about the good of basketball, the good of the NBA, he would move the age limit back, and he would make kids stay in college for 2-3 years, like the NFL, which just pulled off a really successful NFL draft this weekend. Now, before I go forward, I should say, because I know some of you who maybe are not as familiar with my work, I know what you're going to say. You can sit there and say, well, of course the guy that loves college basketball wants kids to stay in college longer. Yeah, it's selfish. That's all you care about is your own career. If college basketball becomes less relevant, then you become less relevant. Listen, All I'll say to that is, if that's how you think, that's fine. Like, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. What I'll tell you is, I've been doing this for 10 years, okay? I've been in this business for 10 years. I somehow figure out a way to remain relevant, and I will continue to be relevant, and college basketball will continue to be relevant. It always cracks me up, this idea that anytime anyone criticizes the NBA for bringing in these players younger and younger, as anyone's less prepared, well, it's because you love college basketball and you don't want players to leave. I don't really care. I'll be perfectly honest. College basketball is doing just fine. For everybody that says the NBA is, or college basketball is a dying sport, I guess what? 17 million people watched UCLA Gonzaga back in the NCAA tournament. 13 million people watched Baylor and Gonzaga in the championship game. And it wasn't even a good championship game. You know what the average of the NBA finals was last year? 7.5 million people. So for everybody that's telling me, oh, well, college basketball is dying. Well, the NBA is dying, if we're being perfectly honest about everything. And on top of that, what I would also say is this. For all the people that say, oh, you just want the good players to stay in college basketball, here's the fact. College basketball, maybe more than any other sport, figures out a way to continually create new stars, okay? Everyone said that college basketball would stink this year without Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga because they're in the G League. Think college basketball was fine. On the flip side, Johnny Juzang, nobody had heard of him unless you're a diehard Kentucky or UCLA or Southern California basketball fan. Nobody had heard of that guy a year ago. Now, all of a sudden, he might be a first-round pick. Same with, I don't know, Drew Timmy. Same with Davion Mitchell from Baylor. Same with Jared Butler from Baylor. College basketball continues to deliver, and it continues to have interest in the bigger picture. So this idea that I'm only saying this because I love college basketball, it's nonsense. Instead, the reason that I'm saying it is because I want what is good for the game, and I see very much what Steve Kerr sees. I see players coming into the NBA younger, I see them less prepared, and I see a product in basketball that I think is suffering both at the NBA level and at the college level as well. And I think it has to do mostly with what I just said. The league continues to get younger and younger, players continue to leave earlier and earlier, and here's the new catch. They continue to leave earlier and earlier whether they're actually prepared for the NBA or not. It's funny. I was thinking about this a few days ago. It used to be, even like 10 years ago, like we had one-and-done kids 10 years ago, but whether it was Kevin Durant, whether it was Mike Connolly, whether it was Greg Oden, whether it was John Wall, whether it was DeMarcus Cousins, like if you were a one-and-done, you actually had to prove yourself and you had to actually be good in college basketball or be good somewhere, whether it was overseas, whatever, before you actually got drafted. Now, we're not even drafting based on productivity in college, and I'll take it a step further. Everyone says the NBA drafts on potential. I don't even know if they're drafted on potential anymore. I think they're just drafting off of a high school ranking. They're saying, well, this kid was good in high school, so he must be good, and we can make him good. And I just look at this year as an extreme example of that. Look at Jalen Johnson at Duke. Really highly ranked coming from high school into college. Came to college and literally did nothing. He wasn't one of Duke's best players. He didn't do anything to help them win. They played better when he didn't play. And he quit the team in the middle of the season. And he probably won't be punished if for that decision-making. Somebody's still probably going to take him in the top 15. How about at Kentucky with B.J. Boston? It's the same deal. I had B.J. Boston on the show. I like him as a kid. I'm wishing him nothing but the best. But this kid came to Kentucky, thought he was a one and done, did nothing, did not prove to anyone that he is ready for the NBA, and he moved on, and he'll probably be drafted really high. And so I think to Steve Kerr's point, there is something here, is that I don't even blame the players in this case, okay? Think about B.J. Boston. Think about Jalen Johnson. If Jalen Johnson goes in the top 15, even after a season in which he didn't help Duke win, they played better without him, and he quit the team, you know what that does if he goes in the top 15? It just reconfirms that his way of doing it is right, that he doesn't need to listen to the coach, that he doesn't need to listen to his agent, that he doesn't need to listen to the GM, that he just, the way he's doing it has always worked out for him. Same with B.J. Boston if he gets drafted high. Why does he ever have to listen to anybody? And I think that's Steve Kerr's point, is these guys come in, they've never been coached, they've never, been pushed in any way, and then, oh, by the way, let's be honest, increasingly now, if you are coached, if you are yelled at, you opt out, you quit, you fake an injury, you switch AAU teams, you switch high school teams, that's just the reality. And now you get kids that come to the NBA that aren't emotionally prepared, that aren't basketball ready. And it goes back to what I said. I think if we really cared about the good of the game, we would talk about pushing the NBA draft limit back rather than forward. Now, will it ever happen? I don't think so. I can almost say with 100% certainty. You know, nothing's guaranteed in life. This is pretty darn guaranteed. The toothpaste is out of the tube and it ain't coming back in. We are not going back to a world where we move back the NBA draft rules. But at the same time, I think it'd be good for everybody. I think it'd be good for the college kids for a couple different reasons. One, because there would be no one and done. So if somebody comes to college and they're not great as a freshman, there isn't that pressure of they have to leave. Well, I was a one and done coming in. I got to be a one and done now. I got to get out. I got to prove. Everyone said I was an NBA player before I even played college basketball. Everybody said I was an NBA player when I was a sophomore in high school. Now I got to go prove it. And so you wouldn't have that situation. But then on the flip side, what I would also say, I also think you would actually have to prove something on the college level if kids had to stay for 2 years. Because take a BJ Boston or a Jalen Johnson this year. If they stunk their freshman year in college, they can now kind of in the current system, well, I mean, come on, it was COVID, it was this, Calipari stinks, he didn't know what he was doing, we didn't have a point guard. Well, now you stay 2 years and you don't produce, then maybe you're just not good enough. Now, I will say in defense of both of those players, because I'm picking on them, BJ Boston, he wasn't helped by some of the stuff that happened in Kentucky. He wasn't helped by not having a point guard. And maybe the answer for BJ Boston, if he had to stay 2 years, wouldn't be to stay at Kentucky. It would be to go somewhere else. I don't know. I'm not placing 100% of the blame on him or Jalen Johnson or anybody. But you make kids stay in college for 2 years, all of a sudden, at some point, you got to produce or you're not getting drafted. And for everybody that says, oh, you know, well, they would just go overseas. Really? You're going to go send your son overseas for 2 years? What if he gets, you know, I don't know. Maybe you go to college for 1 year, then go overseas. I don't know. But what I am saying is for the good of basketball, I think it would be actually good to push the age limit back, because then at a certain point, you have to make somebody earn it. You have to make somebody learn how to play the game. If they struggle, it's okay. Now we're on a timeline where if a kid struggles, he has four bad games. He thinks he's got to transfer because his NBA draft stock is falling apart. And so to me, I just think it'd be better for everybody. And I think it kind of is reiterating what Steve Kerr said. And for everybody listening that, like, and I know there's going to be some of you, oh, that's so unfair and unconstitutional and on this and on that. All I'm going to say is this. I just watched the NFL draft for 3 days. It was awesome. Oh, by the way, I didn't even mention it'd be good for the NBA because now you know more of these guys. I mean, imagine if Jalen Suggs had the tournament that he had and then he comes back and rounds out his game. Same with whoever. You fill in the blank, whatever. The point I'm trying to make, though, is that for everybody that says, oh, it's so unfair, it's so unconstitutional, it's so this, it's so that. Well, I'm just telling you, I watched 3 days of the NFL draft and it was pretty awesome. And it didn't feel like anybody was hurt all that much by having to play 3 years of college football instead of only just one. So I liked what Steve Kerr had to say. I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was reflective a lot in what I have seen over the last couple of years is that, man, I don't think college basketball, I don't think the NBA is in a good place. And I think with the NBA, I think it's a trickle-up effect. Guys struggle in high school, they just move to another high school. Guys struggle in AAU, they just switch AAU teams. Guys struggle in college, they just go pro whether they're ready or not. Guys struggle in college, they train. Like, at some point, you know, you got to teach guys how to, one, deal with adversity, and two, how to play basketball. And so I loved what Steve Kerr said. All right, I think that's it for this episode of the Air Tour Sports Podcast. For four topics, I got a lot out of today's show. But that is all for today's show. I am going to get out of here. Before I do, I want to remind you, please make sure that you are subscribed to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, iTunes, the Podcast Addict app, Podbean, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure that you are subscribed. Make sure to also rate and review the show. Go ahead, give us a quick 5 stars. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, all that good stuff. Make sure you're following on social media at Aaron_Torres on Twitter, at Aaron Torres Pod on Instagram, Aaron Torres Podcast Questions at gmail.com. Aaron Torres Podcast Questions at gmail.com. That is all for today's Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. Shout out to Torrent Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. And barring something surprising, I will be back later this week, probably on Thursday. Maybe we'll do a third episode, depending on what happens. But I'll be back later this week, guys.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.